And merry 4th of July to all my American friends, all patriots now rise up as Mr. Trump declares the end of the American Old Republic and the beginning of the First Directorate today, July 4th, 2025. If I had done this episode, let's say 10, 12 days ago, it would have been very different. It would have been in the middle of the bombing of Iran, which I think took place on summer solstice or close by, June 21 or 22, I forget. It will become a forgotten event. But during that, a few days around that, everyone became incontinent. Have you ever seen Phil Hendry? He's one of my favorite voice performer. He's ventriloquist with many characters. He has one, the Bozell. He plays Bozell character. I lost my mind. You know, it's about a man who go to fireworks show, maybe even 4th of July firework, and he crap himself out of fear, go home, watch his platoon movie or other war movie with his wife, and he crap himself in front of her because PTSD from the fireworks, or maybe it was events the other way around. But then he sues his wife for laughing at him. It's Fire Show from Phil Hendry, one of his best. Look it up. But by the way, have you ever sued a family member, in particular a wife or a girlfriend, for behavior that could be perceived as sexually humiliating or such, like in that movie Lost Highway? I like this scene by David Lynch, where the Bill Pullman, is that who stars in the movie, is he has sex wars with his girlfriend or wife, and at the end she patronizingly taps his shoulder. And in that type of situation, do you know of somebody who has sued? I was recently at the bar with a kind of mistress. No, I was not paying her. A kind of mistress. And she zoomed. And a 22-year-old, something like this Norwegian Chad, if you can, what are the name? Vikingoid, sit next to us and start talking with her in front of me. And she, instead of telling him to go away, she laughs at his jokes. And I initiated legal proceedings against her the very next morning for breach of marital contract, even though we are not married or such. But do you know of cases like that? I think you should use the legal system escalate to every level. Initiate legal and even call the police if necessary. But look, what's happened this last week with the Iran thing, before that, theatrical declamations from various pundits that they won't serve in the Middle East war. You know, the forever wars, yes, that phrase, the forever wars, that they refuse to die for Israel. You know, internet mimicked acquired battle PTSD, like Bozell, a character, shitting yourself from a war that never took place, except in the imaginations of journalists and blowhards. Maybe they hoped it would happen, so they'd be right, so they would feel righteously indignant. I will not be drafted. I lost my mind. You know, I'm suing Trump for the stress of possibly causing a nuclear World War III. BRICS already won. China and India, condominium currently dividing Texas. Any day now, all rising in vengeance of Iran. Please give a break. You know, I don't defend attack on Iran. Actually, I think it was a bad idea. I wrote myself about this. I wrote before it happened, hoping to make the case as best I could, as if anyone in power of decision reads me, but I tried to make common sense case why this attack on Iran was not a good idea. And I still think it was a bad idea, even if it turned out well or didn't turn out badly. It's a matter of principle, okay? Because Trump did not run on this. And insofar as he vaunts about bombing excuse me there. Insofar as he vaunts about bombing Iran or whatever shitholes in the Middle East he gets involved in, he turns himself into a continuation of Bush-Obama retardation when people very much voted for the opposite. And they are not afraid of Iran, a country that specializes in donkey saddles with fluorescent lights. That said, I've had overload of moralistic, histrionic, bad arguments over the last week or two about this conflict. I'm convinced in general that people bringing up bad arguments for a good cause or a cause you agree with, it hurts the cause. So no, I You can be against involvement in the Middle East and in the donkey punch country of Iran. And I'm for disengagement in general from that loser area. I've tried to give reasons why. I think Nietzsche in The Antichrist, actually, although it's excised from the Walter Kaufmann edition, has some good moderate advice for that whole region. He says, desolate it, make it populated by snakes, let it live in infamy forever. Why involve yourself there? But the things I was hearing on this during the bombing itself are incredibly stupid. And where is the war, by the way, that people were warning about? Where is the vaunted war that Mr. Trump was supposed to have started? These are, I remember from Trump's first term also. I don't know if you remember. Now, years later, nothing happened, so... But at the time, people were freaking out when he bombed empty airfields in Syria very soon after coming in. And these same self-important wankers were declaiming, I can no longer support Trump, I was betrayed. And esteemed leaders of online cliques, right? We just got rug pulled, you know, as if an American president has to cater to you. We got rug pulled. Who are you? You are some faggot. Nobody knows. So he bombs some airfields in his own bit of political theater. I mean, this is his first term in Syria. And all these people who actually, if you look into it, they never really supported Trump or what he stands for, even during his first campaign in 2015-16. The only reason they at times come to seem to support him is there is a vehicle to their own wannabe media careers or their delusions of intellectual leadership. They're so insecure about their intellectual standing. And so then they all start to denounce. And then the same thing happened later in his first term with Soleimani, the so-called General Soleimani, when Trump turned that greaser with a beard full of lies, he turned him into a flattened artichoke. This is special Spanish meal, you know. They grill an artichoke on a Josper grill under a kind of a press, so it'd be a flattened grilled artichoke, very good. Sometimes it's served in a broth of ham. Anyway, all these types rose up again. Any day, Iran will retaliate over the assassination of Soleimani, and it will be the mother of all retaliation. And we, the United IRA and PKK and Hezbollah, the total real far-right constituency in America and West Europe of sub-imbeciles, celebrate the martyr Soleimani. And now Trump's really done it, and Iran war is starting, and it's the end of American empire. And the same thing happened this time. There's some weird Antifa mulatto from Sweden who is, oddly enough, promoted by populist factions, so-called, in the United States. And but they will activate their Shaboon 1 rockets, the Iranians, the Shaboon, is it Shabab 1? I do not, the super ballistic rocket. I think it's the Shaboon 1 rockets. Hyperballistic with warheads equipped with the chemical warfare of distilled body odor of 10 million hairy Middle Eastern ape males. Any day now, Colonel this on Fox News, or I guess he doesn't go on Fox News anymore, but is it Douglas something? And resident Antifa, mulatto fat from Compact Magazine, the end of the American empire as Iran unleashes the Shaboon 1 rocket with combined chemical body odor of, gold chain race men. World War IV will start as Russia will no doubt be willing to lose half of its cities in nuclear exchange to avenge the honor of Iran. Meanwhile, Putler, as I've told you before that he would, if you actually look at what the Kremlin statements over many years really are, it should come as no surprise that Putin recently put out a statement that basically he sees Israel as a Russian-speaking country, like half of its population from recent to relatively recent Russian immigration. So, of course, he will not get involved in this war on Iran's side. And so, yes, there will be a strongly worded statement from him and from China and from Gulf states and Saudi Arabia, who, of course, support Israel behind the scenes in this conflict. Yeah, China's famous red lines, you know, look that up. That's a running joke for many decades. Iran threatens to close down the Hormuz Strait to Persia Gulf. Well, that would cripple China, right? Now, think it for a moment, you emotional dummies who want to... I want to see the American gay empire be humbled by China-Iran condominium. Well, all the ones claiming Chinese-Iranian eternal friendship against Anglo-Jewish commercial civilization and the mighty China Middle Empire will stand by the virtuous Iranian mullahs against the gay agenda of international capitalism. But why would they? Think it for a moment. A libtard regime in Iran would never do things like threaten that they would close the Hormuz Strait. Don't you think that China would prefer that? A libtard regime would instead be promoting culinary tours in the Shiraz region and doing cucumbers in sex ed class in Isfahan. They may already be doing this, I think. In the name of Allah, the most merciful, this is how you have a sex change operation in Iran. And in the name of Allah, intercourse with a fresh, crispy cucumber from the Fergana Valley. China is a gay superpower of the world, by the way. That, too. I don't know if you are aware of the bustling gay scene in China supported by the Chinese state. Why wouldn't that be in China's interest to have a libtarded Iran with easily purchased politicians? How many American senators and congressmen who now were voting and doing their constipated theater act against Trump's border enforcement bill, by the way, the bill that just got passed last night and will be signed by Trump with a military parade on July 4th. There's a lot that's stupid in this bill, stupid compromises like in every spending bill that gets passed. But it's historic because it is primarily it's funding for ICE as a super military. And ICE being, for my non-American listeners, the main immigration enforcement agency. And nothing else really matters at this point politically. Why isn't this? This is a wonderful event. But all these congressmen, senators, all of them declaiming, doing their little financial responsibility monkey act. How many of them have sold themselves and their country out, by the way, for one General Tso's dinner with a gold leaf garnish and a happy ending massage? That means a hand job, okay, by a Chinese Filipina hooker on it. I told you many years ago that Japanese in the 1980s said nothing is cheaper to buy off than an American congressman. It's shocking, something at most a $20,000 value. I think even a medium-sized state can afford, you know. So Thomas Massey and Rand Paul, a big libertarian, standing on principle, right, standing up against the profligate Trump, except that Massey, though now he tries to deny it, he was responsible for advancing Biden's budget-busting financial disaster bills out of committee. Don't buy this man Massey's lies, by the way. He disingenuously tries to change the subject when you bring that up, that he was responsible for advancing massive, worthless spending bills of previous governments. And he instead refers to justifications for another of his votes. But in committee, where these things get stopped in the American system, for those of my audience who are from other countries, this stalwart defender of liberty and financial prudence, Thomas Massey, who is a huge fraud, both he and Rand Paul are only opportunistically using libertarian fiscal responsibility arguments. Their real concern is obviously to try to stop border enforcement. As libertarians, they are stompers for the Open Borders Party. I love all the insinuations about Mr. Thiel funding this and that, who actually funds basically nothing, whereas the Koch brothers fund so much, including the anti-border enforcement factions of the Republican Party. And both these men, Rand Paul and especially Massey, I think, they're funded by, if you want to talk about where follow the money, but this is very funny. Massey, he does the indignant anti-Israel shtick now for 1,000 Bangladeshi retweets, but his biggest funder is an Israeli billionaire. So, you know, this is what I've just said to you now is a good distillation of the whole fake mainstream anti-Semitic movement on X. It's all run cynically, I believe, out of Israel and by various similar factions in the United States. By similar, I mean with bad and opposite intentions from what you might expect. The ADL, the SPLC, the Daily Wire, things like that, to give themselves an easy foil, an opportunistic way to try to sow confusion among Trump supporters. All of it has this character, or to make it look that way, at least for media consumption. Anyway, too bad for them. This very nice bill got passed anyway. It's over for all of you prostitutes. $150 billion just been awarded to ICE, Immigration Enforcement Agency, to make it bigger than the Marines Corps. A new military knightly order of border enforcement with possible forward positions in northern Mexico. This is my information. This is the information I have from the White House. And hidden within this bill, under neutral-seeming language, which no one caught yet, is that there are paramilitary militias deputized under a kind of bureaucratic-sounding name. I was promised leadership and ideological training of these cadres, basically to let loose the beasts of the swamp and the bog, the many beasts in America of the wilderness, the wild of the field, the alligator, the puma, the wild cat, grizzly bear, hungry coyotes, all in an awesome assault on Oaxacan and other migrants, while the American eagle stands on branch of a pine and looks proudly at Operation Wetback 3.0. I have to wonder about the timing of this. So Trump bombs Iran, and then immediately in a week or two, they pass this bill by July 4. An extreme court declares multiple judgments in favor of Trump, that local federal judges cannot issue orders anymore, stopping Trump's decrees nationwide, that he's allowed to deport them to concentration camps in the South Sudan. You have to wonder at the timing, did Trump reach a deal with Zog? If so, you have to say it's worth it. This funding for the wall, for ICE as a new, and for me to lead understated, you know, kind of low-key, Basiji-type, anti-wetback militias were basically, I will have access, I am told, to Soviet-era unmarked troop transport cargo ships, Ilyushin 76. You can look up this model. All set up in location that I've been jokingly mentioning all these years in Suriname. And basically, under a creative reading of international law arranged by Mr. Miller, I am allowed to drop just thousands and thousands of the global South immigrants. I'm allowed to airdrop them like sacks of cornmeal over the Atlantic Ocean. Anyway, look, Iran, what can you say? I'm just tired of moralistic, stupid arguments, you know? I'll never die in a war for Israel, the Israelis. Most of the people making this argument have never been in the military, nor would ever be. I don't know that they know any soldiers, or especially in combat and such units. I know many veterans in active duty. I'm constantly in touch. I've known them for many years, and many of them would welcome any war at all. Some in the past specifically mentioned the Iran war as a preference. These are combat soldiers, combat officers, men in military intelligence and such. They're not cooks, you know, they're not military massage therapists. I'm sure such a thing exists. Strawberry oil-flavored massage at Bandar Air Base. Specialists for the USS Harvey Milk. Would you let Representative Swalwell come to your house with various oils and creams and such? But look, these men I mentioned in the military and the veterans, they would very much support going to war because they're not stupid. They know that they joined the military because they want action. And what I object to in this argument is the leftist smear implied in this posture. The smear on soldiers that they are dupes who are taken advantage of, they're to be pitied, and they definitely need you, an internet minor pundit wannabe wanker, or a spent-up 35-year-old ex-SoundCloud mystery meat hip-hop artist smelling of cheap hashish perfume or this, or a spent MMA fighter who, you know, to save them from dying for Zionism or global capital or what. It's a leftist smear on soldiers. It's a very old smear that they are poor dupes who didn't join to fight them wars for capital and they're being wasted. You know, maybe you could have claimed something like that in 2003 or 2004, that soldiers were being duped, although it was stupid back then too. But now, after 20 years of retarded interventions, and believe me, these soldiers know very well the causes that they fight for are stupid. They're doing it anyway for the action and for the personal experience. They're not Boy Scouts. That's why they join, you know? And I don't see why it matters one way or another what soldiers' support. They have their own reasons. Let me ask you, if you took a poll and you found out that most combat soldiers support Iran intervention, would that make it a good thing? I think it would still be bad. What's the point, then, of this cloying argument about you are standing up for the poor, gullible soldiers? They need the protection of a leftist, neo-Chomskyite intellectual like yourself. It's the same as when people accuse neocons of not sending their children to the military, which is an absurd thing to say in an age when parental authority is nil. What does it mean to send your children to college or the military, by the way? It reminds me of these guys online. I will never send my daughter to college to get fucked. The colleges are bordellos. I will shoot you if you talk to my 18-year-old daughter. And puffing themselves up to pretend they're a Roman patriarch. And in real life, their authority over their children, their wives, is nil. And I think your girlfriend is my girlfriend, okay? I think your daughter is my girlfriend. I think she's everyone's girlfriend. Are you mad? And that, too, is an irrelevant argument. Because, for example, Bill Kristol's son, I think, did join. And I think he was an infantry or Marines officer in a combat unit, if I'm not wrong. And probably, by the way, he did join because his dad extols war and maybe in some way that was attractive to him from a young age to his son. But who cares about that, okay? Because just if his son is or was in the military doesn't make his advocacy for interventions or wars more legitimate. It's still stupid either way. And America as a whole is hurt by these things regardless of the personal lives or motives of the people advocating for them. I can't stand bad arguments like this. It's... here's a family that looks good, therefore the father's judgment must be respected in political affairs. And by that reasoning, Gavin Newsom and Ursula von der Leyen or such, they have picture-perfect family. Oh, they have skin in the game, they have families, they look to the future. They must be respected, right? In fact, the faggot upper middle class in America that actually runs the country in multiple ways still, they set the cultural and intellectual and social tone. They have quite good family values, personally. They are small C conservative. This was Charles Murray's argument in I forget the book title, but it's where he contrasts the upper middle class to the values of this dying working class town called Fishtown or whatever. And yet, this doesn't make their political judgments correct of the upper middle class with good families. In fact, they're usually very wrong. They're much more often wrong than a 22-year-old who's unemployed and who is socialized on 4chan or whatever. I guess it's... that's 10 years back or more. Isn't that funny? 4chan's glory days are a bit more remote now. 4chan poll has been dead for a while. But so anyway, since we are on bad arguments, brimming full of moraline and turbo retardation regarding wars abroad, there's also the fraudulent kind of refugees are caused by war argument. It goes something like, if you start wars in the Middle East, they don't mention other parts of the world, but it's all, you know, the Middle East, because they want to imply the Israel thing, you know, if you destabilize countries, then it will cause people from there to become refugees to the West, which is another stupid and fundamentally cucked position, because it implies that conditions abroad rather than your own decisions regarding borders and national sovereignty is what determines how many people come into your country. And this argument about wars cause refugees assumes governments in civilized countries have to or will let in refugees if the cause that made you a refugee is sympathetic or can be argued to be the civilized world's fault, which is like, okay, now you are checkmated in multiple ways if you accept that, okay? Because in fact, there are billions of people in the global south with shitty lives who see now daily in their pocket iPotatoes a much better life available in the first world. So the demand for migration into Europe, the United States, Australia, and so on is basically unlimited regardless. And it's known in any case that most vast majority, in fact, come for that life, and especially for the government benefits and the available infrastructure and secondary government benefits, even when they get some jobs. So they're basically all economic migrants, and the argument that migration is caused by wars in the Middle East is another variation of the leftist claim that European colonialism is the cause of post-war migration into Europe, or that French current day meddling in Africa or other such is what causes refugees. Same stupid argument. It's a long-standing leftist position. Global capital is doing it, man. Population under pressure You look up Bob Marley's son has song about this. How will we feed the world here? Which is a lie when the blame is shifted on so-called fundamental causes. That's a lie. Another variety of this is that stupid demographic curve, the graph spread by everyone, where African population is shown projected ballooning by several billions over the next few decades. And nationalists and white nationalists mean this graph, this curve, as a warning, but they're a minority. To the vast majority of people, when they see this graph, it functions the same way as a justification. Or look at the unsustainable population growth. What will we do to feed the world, those poor people? However, will we be able to justify letting these poor people die? How can you do that? And maybe you should be ready to make space for desperate newcomers then. This is how they think. And I'm saying that all arguments that depend primarily on discussion of conditions in the home countries, I think, are losing positions, because the supply of mankind is already so vast now, and the differential between life possibilities in the first and third world so vast and will remain so, that the supply of people who want to come will always be unlimited in practice. It will be beyond what any first world nation could ever accept if it wants to survive. And so the reality I mentioned a few episodes ago, that actually birth rates are falling all over the world, especially so in the last 10 years and accelerating in the last 5. But that is meaningless in this context, because not if, when it falls to sub-replacement level in the whole of the third world and Africa, that would not lessen the supply of people who want to come to the West. There will still be tens and hundreds of millions who want to do it. And my point is that any argument that focuses on anything other than border control, national identity, national sovereignty, ultimately, I would hope, a kind of racial argument that can lead to a Europe united on a racial basis. The prerequisites in any case of border control, however you define it, anything else that considers that ends up being irrelevant at best. And this also includes the argument that it is the large financial interests and the employers who want cheap labor that are the ones driving mass migration. It's okay to bring that up. I have many times myself, even I think, is it Plutarch? It's from ancient... this was a complaint also against the ancient Roman rich that they were dispossessing their middle classes by bringing in slave migrants. It's true in some cases, like in East Europe and increasingly in Japan, which is so unfortunate. Now you see in Japan many 7-Elevens staffed by Indians and Uzbeks. For some reason, there are lots of Uzbeks in Tokyo. But on the other hand, in most civilized countries, this is not the real reason, and otherwise migrants would be treated as they are in Dubai and such. What's really going on, yes, some industries are benefiting financially, others are not at all. And in any case, the argument is made irrelevant by, for example, climate change hysteria. Go on any European news station this week, you'll find them. You can find European news stations streaming on YouTube in their English language versions. I've been watching France 24 in the background all week. You can go to that or German DW, any others. It's all the same. Every hour they show hellfire red covering all of Europe. They do it every summer now. The programming about climate change, especially to younger people, the redefinition of summer heat to younger idiots. Summer heat has always been unbearable in pretty much all of urban Europe, except for the Scandinavian cities. It was always a thing. No self-respecting Roman in modern Rome, would stay in Rome during the months of July and August. Same for places like Madrid. But it's not just that. All over the Balkans and actually Paris, all of Europe becomes, European cities, uninhabitably hot in July and August. And in August, they are emptied out, actually. People leave. Now this is redefined as an apocalyptic event, bringing you the sum of all fears. The turning of the world into a cauldron of red, no doubt caused by, yes, again, greedy international capital. Smirking men in top hats, long cigarette holder, planning to bake your grandmother alive, starving the global south through desertification or whatever. So if there are in the future, for example, mass famines in Africa and elsewhere, whether they're caused actually by climate events or not, they'll be framed that way. They'll be framed, the civilized world will be held responsible. And what will your arguments be then regarding the evil capitalists who want cheap labor? The claim will be that you have to let these people in out of compassion to save their lives before climate change turns them into Senegalese human barbecue. And so there will always be a large reservoir of impressionable fools in the West who will want hordes and hordes of such people, and there will be people in the third world who will come not because of climate or wars, but because they saw on their iPhone and heard that their cousin Ngubu is getting Gibbs, is getting an apartment from the European, from the French state and so on. What's my point in all of this? That, by the way, I knew in the 2000s American students who wanted to study in France, and you could have applied. I didn't go through it, not because out of I would have been against. I think you should take advantage of anything a modern state offers you and rip them off. But I didn't take advantage of it because I don't like bureaucratic procedure and I get bored. But I have American friends who certainly did not need welfare, but they went to study in France and they applied for welfare from the French government. They were getting all kinds of financial benefits, as you know. So the whole war causes refugee thing is another way to smear European nations. You know, unless you're willing to enforce border and remigration. That's my point in all of this. Nothing else really works as an argument. You know, and like it or not, European nations in the third world, in Africa, are in a struggle now with Wagner or its remnants, the Russian mercenary companies, and with China especially over Africa and so on. They will continue to meddle there. That doesn't drive migration to Europe from Africa, no more than the horrible war that Trump might end between Congo and Rwanda. If Trump can end Congo wars, he should certainly get the Nobel Prize. The smirky European newscasters, I don't know, that would be a huge achievement, but that's a gigantic war. Millions of people have died over the last 25 plus years in Africa, in the Congo. Nevertheless, the Africans from there, that's not why they came into Europe. The cause is Gibbs. You give me that. That's the cause. The cure is not waging or not waging war abroad. It's just saying, no, you don't want them in. You don't have to let them in. The cure also may be, once they are in, as they were put in United States, is that you get Basiji anti-migrant special operational groups that have been funded, thankfully, by this bill that Trump will sign today, SA. That's right. Subcomandante is becoming a reality. I have already arranged death flights over the Atlantic on the Pinochet model. Thousands of migrants have already been processed by schools of Barracuda in the Bermuda Triangle. The Central Processing Center for All Mankind is becoming a reality. Look, now I go for a coffee break, and next I will chimp at you for an hour or so at the disgusting condition of European cities in our time. I will be right back.
من هیچ ندانم که مرا آن که سرش از اهل بهشت یا دوزخ زشت دانی یا بطی یا بربطی بر لب کشت این عرص مرا این هر سه مرا این هر سه مرا نقد و تو را نسیه به یه بوتی یه قربتی بر این هر سه مرا نقد و تو را نسیه به Thank you. که امروز تماشا تا سبزه خاک ما تا سبزه خاک ما
I yes, Iran. I remember a Persian beauty. I stalked her when I was about 17. It is said Iranian women are the most beautiful in the world. Big cat-like eyes, this girl. Have you ever seen Ingres paintings? I know it's not correct pronunciation. I absolutely refuse to, but he painter of Oriental erotic beauty. I-N-G-R-E-S. Ingres. Pronounce it that way. It's fine. And he post naked Oriental, by which I mean Near Eastern women's. I want this. I want to be a sultan with harem in Baghdad. Do you dream, gentlemen, of enjoying the beauty of a Daria from Shiraz in blue silks, deep moist eyes of a forest doe serving you rose-flavored sherbet, sorbet, whatever, as you you can recline 200 pillows with such woman attending you. I had a vision where I was the Bab, the gate, a prophet of infinite erotic power, driving women sexual frenzy by sound of his sex voice in sermons, your cult leader. Would it be bad if such women, liberated Persian women, were made available now to all by the foresight of Trump's bombs? At least can we get that out of it? After all, Trump has already made himself the mortal enemy of Slavic men, by which he takes the older women to be his serial wives. He's widely hated in Slovakia and Slovenia as a pilferer of their women. And now, why not add to this the historically famous Persian beauties to make them available? As like Berlusconi said, the top-class pussy has to be shared around, you know, has to be shared. This is what binds true political parties together in our parliamentary democracies. It's not financial speculation. It's not a different class of men. Political men are motivated by this, what I just said, this the spirit of our times, the sharing of the mistresses. Look, you go to any small European country, a place like Portugal, for example, if you want to see what these countries are like, if you know their government officials, the elected ones, even the heads of agencies who are not elected, they want to be on the beach with their mistress. The business of governing is something they want to get out of the way with as little headache as possible, preferably by 11:30 a.m. They work from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and they want to fuck their mistress and go to just have cheap wine with the. This is why woke really happens, by the way, because you allow multiple factions in your country demanding insane things like symbolic recognition rituals. And you just want to be on the beach, so you will agree to that. You want them out of your house as fast as possible. You want to do your mistress in the back room of Café do Brasil or whatever in Lisbon. And this is my friend bureaucrat insight. You know, even in ancient Rome, you see, Caligula just wants to get insane minorities out of his hair. They're causing problems in having factional fighting in cities, and he wants to enjoy his statues in the garden. So, you know, just carve out a special recognition for them, stop them from making trouble and pestering you. At the everyday level, I think that's how it works. There's no high theory necessary. And of course, this annoys the majority sometimes, but as long as you don't flood them or offend them too much, it's sustainable for an empire. Or even for something like the United States or West Europe that possess just the downsides of an empire without the actual glory and being of an empire. It's sustainable to keep quite a few parasites and even offend the majority, I mean, unfortunately. Remember that Russian white nationalists feel terribly slighted by the Putler because they feel that he privileges Russia as a multiracial, multiconfessional union too much. And of course, this has to do, it has to keep together so many minorities for hundreds of years. I mean, to be fair, it's always been this way, Russia, a successor to steppe states. I think probably a successor regime directly to the Khazarian Khaganate. But the Persian mullahs, by the way, they have to do the same. Persia is a multiracial, multicultural country. Are they woke? The woke right is taking over Iran. A Zeri day of pride. Imagine your Persian girlfriend, you're an Iranian guy, and your Persian girlfriend insists that you must attend the Balochi Lives Matter rally. I joke, but you know, there are black Iranians. They live in Khuzestan, the other provinces in the south by the Gulf, I think. They're part of the old slave trade from East Africa, Bantu, so-called Zanj, but Bantus from East Africa and slaves and brought by Arab and other traders to the Gulf area. And then there's the communities of them in Iran. There are some black Iranian Shia major clerics, you know, clerical leaders, which is why the Ayatollah was posting in favor of George Floyd and Black Lives Matter, maybe. Eddie Murphy is also black Iranian, it is said. But I got people mad again the other day, what is new, but this time about Europe. It's become a rite of passage for every aspiring right-wing-based influencer to go to Europe and take videos of migrant neighborhoods. And some of these neighborhoods have been that way since the 1970s, and they're not representative of what life is like in any major European city or even any secondary one. Then they pretend the video is representative of Europe as such, of Rome or Paris or whatever, and it's just this discredits you, makes everyone think that the anti-immigration cause is made up of liars. Why? Because people who live in Europe or visit it know that's not what it's like. And if it were like that, Europe would not be the biggest tourist destination in the world, right? Asians, Chinese, many others who come there in huge groups, they would not be telling their friends to go. They would be telling their friends, it's terrible, don't go. It's only migrants. It's roving groups of migrant hawkers. The streets are unsafe and dirty. Girls are getting raped everywhere. It's filthy. There's shit and homeless tents on the street. And it's just tourism would collapse by word of mouth alone if that were the case. You'd see videos on every random Japanese or Chinese tourist, the same thing supposedly. You know, they're not censored to show that, right? But somehow you only see that from Lauren Southern, and who goes to, again, some migrant suburb where there's nothing really of note, where you wouldn't want to go there anyway, and that's where they keep the migrant or foreign populations. And this content is eaten up on one hand by Bangladeshis and the like. They kind of third world people who want to jerk off over the idea of European decline. Yeah, Europe getting taken over by migrants, man. And then there are many conservative Americans for different reasons. I'm saying not the same. Often they have good intentions. They want or do believe the same. So they boost this kind of pessimism about Europe. Maybe they have good intentions. They want to save it, but they don't know what it's like. But I'm saying it's from people who have not been there. So actually, migrants are not going to be part of your life in Europe if you go to Paris or Munich or such. You'll see plenty of foreigners, and it's unsavory for different reasons, but the vast majority of these are tourists, not the migrant horror scenes you see on right-wing videos. Otherwise, again, tourism would collapse, but in fact, the opposite is happening. Asians, among others, are telling their friends, it's amazing, go. Europe is getting record tourism, despite, in my opinion, being absurdly overpriced. You know, they're not going to, let's say, Uruguay, where it's cheaper and actually maybe more, you could claim, more ethnically homogenous, at least according to right-wing influencers on Twitter. But they're going to overpriced Europe. They're telling their friends, you know, and this summer, I think, it seems to be a feeding frenzy, especially tourist hordes. I suggest you stay away from Europe. I'm staying away, okay? If what you hear and see about European cities were true, you would not get American expats, often quite rich ones. In a domino effect, many continued to move, flocking to places like Lisbon and lately Madrid and Rome, not to speak of Paris already for a long time, driving up the property prices in these places to an impossible degree. In Portugal, for example, why is that happening? Well, such liars will tell you, these influencer or demagogic liars I'm talking about, they will say, I'm using a video and you can see it with your own eyes. Well, how can you claim that in times of media manipulation, not to speak, I'm not saying they're doctoring their videos, but that will soon happen, no doubt. But in an age of digital manipulation, how can you make this claim about, oh, well, it's on a video, it must be true. After decades of simple leftist lying tactics using videos. For example, having protests where they engage in extreme violent behavior against police, and then they only film one policeman retaliating with a baton. And so putting that as representative, saying it was unprovoked, saying that the police is a fascist authoritarian. They did this during the Floyd riots too. I can select video to show you anything. I can show you homeless in Hong Kong. There are quite a few there. It's not representative of that place. I can show you something that's somewhat representative of Hong Kong, which is that in the underpasses of highways and some public squares and so on Sundays, which is the day off of the Filipino and other such maids, they get full of the, you know, picnic of Filipino maids, and I can take a video of that and pretend that that's going to be your life in Hong Kong, and that's what Hong Kong's like. And the fact is, Hong Kong is in decline for other reasons, and it would be a lie to show you homeless or Filipino maids and claim that it's because of that. That's a very tiny, insignificant part of people's life in Hong Kong at the moment. And the left had a total command of media and culture, and it destroyed itself because it lied and exaggerated, but really lied, actually. And now these malicious imbeciles on the so-called right want to do the same to the anti-immigration cause, and they even have the stupidity, the guileless stupidity, to admit, well, I'm doing propaganda, as if that's a good thing to say that you do. As if that's even possible when you're a minority who's actually widely hated without control of a state. Europe is getting flooded by tourists, who any tourist who can rub 2 yen together or whatever to what is the currency in Saudi Arabia called, and by expats. And this is happening because the truth is actually somewhat the opposite of what's being told on Elon X, Elon Twitter, which has become a factory of deception as pervasive as what existed during libtard years. All due respect to Mr. Nick Land, who was on my last episode, I don't like to get into arguments with guests, but to the extent X was at all valuable, Twitter is, because Trump was unbanned, and yes, that helped him win in 2024, probably. But if things will improve in the West, it will be because of him and some others, but not because of the example of the so-called far right or hard right, whatever you want to call them, new right in America and Europe, which is my friend Europe Esperance keeps being proven correct. They are unfortunately stupid and vindictive in a way that those unfamiliar with it, you cannot underestimate the self-destructive, stupid maliciousness, especially of the French and American far right, for example. I think they do far more bad than good to, for example, the anti-immigration argument. It's very misleading, the retweets, things like that on X. The perception in this ideological ghetto is that you're changing minds. You see, 10,000 retweets, excuse me. All that's happening is they're doing their best to discredit ideas that are an alternative to leftism or liberalism. And in darker moments, I've imagined this was the purpose of Elon taking over X, to demoralize, and in the moment of the left's decline to say, we cannot defeat these arguments, so you know what we will do? We will flood with angry and amplify lying tactics to make them all look like mentally ill retards spreading easily disproven lies. And this is what I mean about a bad argument for a good cause being a lot worse than nothing at all. Especially, I mean, if it's widely publicized. For example, if you live in a country with a corrupt and stupid government that is increasingly or already authoritarian, and some guy come with a big show and starts saying that the reason the government is bad isn't because of its manifest incompetence and corruption. No, the real reason is they're also demon satanic worshippers who sexually abuse children. Maybe they eat children in rituals. They're part of a thousands-year-old elite cult. And if you do that, you might be suspected of being an agent provocateur who is there to make dissidents look crazy and stupid and to discredit them. And so then I might be describing actually government-seeded fake opposition figures in the East Bloc in the 1980s, or I might be describing a guy who, for unclear reasons, has debates with Rabbi Shmuley. Now that I've gone on this rant, I'll tell you the truth about Europe, a truth that will make some people chimp. If you go there for more than a week, or even whatever, a few days, actually, you can, for whatever time, go there for a few days, fine. But if you make it your home even somehow, Tourists are going to be a far bigger downside for your life than migrants are in a day-to-day sense. Now, long-term, I think migrants are an existential risk to Europe. But it's false to say that they will be part of your life now in any substantial way, and to base the case against them on these videos, which are experienced as lies by anyone who's been to Europe and sees it that way, is a huge mistake, is what I'm saying. Whereas the hordes of tourists make every European city now unspeakably vulgar. It's like the people of Costco, zombies lumbering about everywhere. Beautiful cobblestone streets with zombies. I can't take it anymore anyway, you know. That's why I stay away from Europe. Now, I ended up in Europe only because during the COVID thing, and there were some places where I could get into Europe, and formally there were lockdowns, but informally there was relative freedom, unlike in most of the third world, which is tightly locked. Argentina, Buenos Aires, completely prison locked for 2 years. But for me, it was always, before COVID, Europe was a place that was just this, an unreal playing ground of tourism, where there was no actually vital local life. There were only, in my opinion, two or three real cities in Europe. Everything else was tightly controlled, antiseptic. So actually, it's the opposite of what you hear, in the sense that the buildings are grand and beautiful. They're traditional, beautiful architecture. The streets are sparkling clean throughout Europe. Spaniards, for example, will complain about the streets of Madrid, but any American who's visited there will tell you they're clean and orderly to an unheard of degree in the United States. And they're not only, it's not even that it's unclean, but for example, some of the smaller cities in Spain, like Oviedo, you can eat off the pavement. It's sparkling. So it's even more, you know, there's police everywhere. There's light out at all hours. Nobody feels unsafe in pretty much any European city, including, for example, Lisbon, which is hugely diverse, which I find very unpleasant and unaesthetic, the kinds of diversity in Lisbon. But actually, even if you go to migrant neighborhoods in many places in Europe, like Amsterdam and such, they're safe to walk around compared to especially many American inner cities. The comparison is actually misleading. You can walk around many migrant suburbs of Paris. Nothing will happen to you. They're safe as such. But this is the problem, you see, because Europe is a victim of being too nice and too safe. As a result of that, it's also enormously overvalued. It's a ripoff compared to basically all of Asia, including Tokyo, and Hong Kong, which have reputations as being extremely expensive cities. But they were not so even 10, 15 years ago, not compared to Europe, okay? As for going to an European city, whether you go from Portugal to Slovakia, and they're all really nice, you know, even in the East Europe. I'm not saying don't do it. I'm saying the opposite. See it for yourself if you have such opinion. I remember always an American friend who told me what a relief being in Vienna was for his first time outside the United States, that he could feel a weight lifted off him. The girls could be nice. Things don't have to be this demented, standoffish pressure in social relations. So it could be great, but you know, when you look at what Europe could be, the landscape, the mountains, the sea, and the beautiful forests that are like theme parks. You can walk through the forest, widely spaced trees, the sea towns, the beautiful fishing villages, varied architecture, often perfectly preserved medieval cities. And you drive just randomly around the Italian countryside. It looks perfect. You can take perfect Instagram photos. But the problem is its accessibility, its fame, its safety, and the European location everyone wants to crowd into. It's mobbed. And the nice places, which is, you know, where also all the Gucci and so on stores are, just hordes and hordes of white trash, fat boomers, the airport terminal crowd, and then, of course, the mystery meat and the Lovecraftian beige and brown varieties, roided out like a half-lesbian, half-Guatemalan with a rat face on the night out, dressed to the nines, reek of overwhelming cheap perfume. Arabs love to, you know, just like if you walk on Venice Beach area, Los Angeles, and it's clouds of pot smoke, you can't escape that smell. And then in Europe, you can't escape the infernal perfume smells. All the hairy apes of the beige races wear this in Europe. But these are not migrants, my friends. They're tourists, often well-to-do tourists. Chinese grandmothers in capri pants, haunting seaside fortresses in Europe from world conquests was planned for, launched 500 years ago, ships around the world, and now inhabited by this infantile, postmodern, it's a museum, you know. Sorry, this is not how I relate to history. To go look at buildings and cobblestone streets, and then everyone around me is other people from around the world who came to look at the buildings, and then the local life doesn't exist. It's entirely drowned out by this pointless fretting of tourism and foreigners, and you can only see in Italy, you can only see local people even in the small towns late at night, and it's annoying, obnoxious, overcrowded, even when in parts of Paris or Madrid are still nice and full of young local people, it's still wildly overvalued, and their energy, the energy of these young people that still exist there, they do in parts of Paris and Madrid, but their independence, the possibilities for life for them are reduced to this dependent, sorry state where they're caretakers of a museum for tourists. And I cannot stand this antiseptic, infantile type of existence. I never planned on living either in Europe or the United States for this reason. I long again for the dirty parts of the world that you like to complain about. This is what you don't want to understand, that a lot of the people who complain about migrants in Europe are doing it in the name of turning Europe into more of what actually makes it intolerable, unlivable, what I've spoken about. These mean migrants, they're preying on, they're so criminal and violent, we're shaking in our knees for, you know, and they want actually a more controlled, more precious and quaint. They want more pedestrian streets, more unreal historical reenactment, museum life, and the actual obliteration of the vital life of the native Europeans who live there. Now, actually, European youth have to utterly expel all the barbarians. The migrant refuse, that goes without saying. I've been talking about that for a long time, but you can't base the argument on that, about that, on false videos, misleading videos. I think Italy is something like 90% still ethnic Italian, and this idiot come on X or something, shows a video, he goes to some terrible neighborhood there, and people start, oh, Italy's over, it's 90% or something Italian. They do have some of these European countries, actually, foreigners, many foreigners are from East Europe, by the way, in places like Luxembourg and places like that. Many of the so-called foreign workers are from Poland, Romania, Bulgaria, and such. Are you okay with that? I don't know, that's a quite different argument, you know. A lot of these countries are 85% plus white, and in some cases 90% native. The situation is perfectly solvable within a few years. I am not even going to say a generation, 5 to 10 years. If the political will is there, it can be solved. But false videos don't help that. In any case, the migrant refuse has to go without saying. In the longer term, they're absolutely existential threat to European civilization. But these hordes of gawkers who threaten to turn Europe, you know, the dystopia from Welbeck's book, The Map and the Territory, where Europe just becomes a playground for Arab, Russian, Chinese oligarchs. They come to enjoy high-quality organic foods and local terroir, the infinite variations in the terroir of the wine and the food and the cheese, historical appreciation of empty castles. Well, that's a fate about as bad as having migrant favelas. It's easier to fix, right, you would think. But the problem is that both of these things are symbiotic on each other, and that often people who complain about one are doing it in the name of entrenching the other. And if you can talk of two pathogens being in a symbiotic relationship to each other, I mean tourism and migration, this is what these are in Europe. Very often migrant laborers are brought in to staff the kinds of temporary seasonal businesses that cater to these crowds of tourists. Each of these evils reinforces the other. Anyway, that's already what Europe mostly feels like already. I mean the stuff from Welbeck, where it's just this playground of frivolous entertainment. And I like to go to cities in Asia to witness the local life, where maybe minorities do exist, but they, you know, there's an expat community in all places in the world now. They maybe add some mood to the place, but generally it's kept under 5% or whatever or so. And in the villages, you rarely see a foreigner. I remember in Brazil was like this years ago. You could drive into the countryside. Many times they had not seen an American, you know. But now with globalization acceleration, isolation is very difficult. But you see, without isolation, real style, therefore real elegance, cannot develop ever, as long as this everywhere gets trodden by the pigfoot of the normal fag who goes there to gawk at things and film things and show his friends of himself there. So where to find isolation? Where to find peace? Where can a style be nurtured in relative safety, cocooned over a while? I don't know. I saw Russia Girl on X Lament recently, some e-girl from Russia. I think she's Russian. I don't know what she is, actually. But she was lamenting that she has to leave Africa where she has some job. Why? You are told now by these people, again, the people I criticize, that, Africa's terrible and this. Yes, of course, on one hand, it is terrible. But on the other, her life there, your life there as an expat, could be extreme easy and pleasant and free. Not controlled, but like in the first world. She lives there. She doesn't live in a slum. She lives among other expats who are there looking for adventure. And it's just the clubs, by which I mean the private clubs, the tennis clubs and whatever, the safaris, the treks into the wild, the beach bars. It possesses the feeling of a frontier at some level. Strangely enough as it is, isolation as a foreigner. I have now left for such places to write my second book, which I hope will be ready by the end of the summer. Anyway, I will be right back to discuss whores and whores in Europe. There's a new grotesque style for women of dressing. It's part of the neo-trash. I mean, neo-trad, neo-traditionalist representative art, biome, or general mood, by which I don't mean anything actually traditionalist or part of any surviving traditions. But there's a kind of horrible where normal fags will put a child singing some vaguely classical-sounding emotional pop music in a sparkling dress with a gay orchestra and then post, "This is white culture," and 20,000 retweets. And a lot of neo-Russian culture is like this. I call it populist realism with pornified characteristics. You can see it in sculptures too. I'd have to show you examples. They're self-conscious attempts to mimic vaguely classical or neoclassical idealism, but it's heavily filtered through a porn-warped McDonald mind of the modern normal fag with coarse, superficial tastes. It ends up looking flat, spiritless, mall artwork. You might have seen it on Indian social media accounts posting the kind of threads, here are 20 examples of amazing art produced today that spits at modern art norms, spits at postmodernism, and embraces beauty. And it's this, you know, something you might find in a Gulf Arab's Las Vegas penthouse, a reproduction of a Greek statue. This is the principle also I feel behind much Asian sensibility today. Chinese making replicas of Italian Renaissance cities and so on. Who can tolerate this? I'm talking about sculptures. There's a woman and she's semi-nude and has kind of a veil draped around her shoulder, and the face has no character or nothing to it. It's wipe it out, please, Mr. Trump. Let me direct the ICE militias against this efflorescence of bigoted, superficial parody of classical forms. I must tell you, I'm opposed also to the revival of so-called classical architecture movement, because I see it a kind of historical reenactment. So Budapest rebuilding Habsburg-era buildings, which is the least worst of it, right? I have no huge objections to that. But they are, even in that case, replicas of a time 100-something years ago. That was not even a Hungarian style. It was an Austrian copy of a French style that was at the time a few decades old. They were not copying buildings from 100 years before in an act of self-conscious historical reproduction when they built those original things in whatever, 1900, 1910, Vienna and Budapest. I think a lot of the reaction against modern architecture, which, you know, Mr. Tucker Carlson's concern aside, it was not actually invented as a humiliation ritual. And brutalism was not invented as a humiliation ritual, by the way. And I think a lot of the reaction against it is misplaced because of the incidental correlation between the use of modern architecture and the use of cheap materials, which would be used in a democratic mass age, regardless of what art styles you, you know, so which then people come to associate them by circumstances, what I'm saying. But you can have neoclassical architecture also built out of very cheap, shoddy materials, you know. I've stayed hotels or something in parts of Crimea or ex-Soviet Union, and it looked horrible. It's plastified, so-called classical, you know, this. And the reason the government buildings like Boston City Hall are alienating, I don't think it's because of the architecture. It's because of what happens inside. The humiliation ritual is not Corbusier. It's a shibun or a deranged, vindictive 29-year-old woman who decides to make your week hell with misinterpretations of bureaucratic rules, which she sees as something that gives her power over you. I think actually it would be even more of a perverse experience to have to go through that in a building that mimicked classical art forms. Right, Chantel challenges you to get 20 forms and stamps in triplicate, but it's made so much better because there are plastic Corinthian columns behind her. You know, there you go, guy. There's your symbolic finery. Don't you feel so much better being raped by female bureaucrats now? The spirit of the immortal Albert Speer. Albert Speer, please use your death ray to annihilate these faggots from orbital station. I want the architecture of Albert Speer. I like modernism. I don't need your cobblestone streets so you feel like it's... So it's my long way of giving you the aesthetic context. As it strikes me, at least this new style of dressing, I don't know about it. I didn't see it in prior years. I don't know if these are literal whores. I've been going to red light districts all over the world for many years. This is first year I'm seeing this. It's like a long, form-fitting evening dress with like formal pretensions. Do you know what I'm talking about? I've seen it in various European cities now. I'm telling you, I'm not being cute. I can't tell. I don't know if everything I'm telling you is I'm making a mistake, and these girls are actually real prostitutes, like for running tricks for 200 euros or what. But they wear these long, formal, almost formal dresses, except like all the sham cheap forms that I've been talking about on this segment. It comes off more like a populist, pornified parody of a formal evening dress. Somehow it reminds me, please forgive, I love Japan, but you can walk around the south of Ginza. It's also called Shinbashi, I think. The place where Shinbashi melds with Ginza, and you'll see hostesses at the evening after 6, 7, 8 p.m. They're wearing a kind of long dresses. From afar, you think, well, that could be nice. But when you get closer, the materials are cheap. There's a ridiculous flower design. It looks like these cheap curtains they have on, like an old Hasidic lady's dress, you know. All that's missing is the fake hair. And what I'm seeing in, you know, and smells of naphtha. What is that called? They use these mothballs. I'm seeing in European capitals isn't exactly that style, I'm saying. But it has the same, by analogy, it's like a cheap, in this case, it's actually porny, stomach-turning parody of an evening dress. And a lot of these girls have hippopotamus-like form. And I don't know. I don't get... Should I go on a tangent? I will make pornography, I think. The world is flooded with bad pornography, worthless pornography, but I'm getting really tired, though. I have to tell you, just a quick aside of what's online. You may be able to tell from my exasperation. The so-called right-wing sewer that's developed on Instagram, that's developed now on X, on Twitter. It is so boring. It's always the same points made over and over again, week in, week out. And the intellectual insecurity, wanting to, oh, and here, excuse me, some refer to me, and here's what Bab said, and isn't it wonderful that he said this, and oh, what a nice intellectual. I didn't come online, and especially on a mass messaging platform like Twitter, to be given a pat on the head and do a little show for leftist media. I'm being made to feel now. I don't seek respect. It feels... This whatever is going on Twitter feels completely spent now. I'm tired of it. I came online to have fun, to enjoy myself, and to post outrageous things. And maybe it's time, maybe under a different pseudonym, who knows? But it would be completely outrageous pornography that would push all the right buttons. I've been thinking about what are the right buttons to push that would inspire widespread lust and rage simultaneously. That's kind of the psychological trigger you have to. But anyway, look, so these prostitutes is what I'm asking. Are they prostitutes, or is this a kind of neoclassical trash prostitute style that's even worse than like wearing short skirts? It's also arising in the arts, I'm saying, in the social media and elsewhere. So, and you know, it's summer, right? It's summer, and the ideal would be a beautiful, elegant, simple French summer dress, or even slightly slutty, informal wear, you know, with short shorts, or yoga pants. There used to be that style, or sarong style, the sarong kind of neo-Indonesian style. But that would be slutty and nice. But instead, on these very hot days, you see what I'm telling you, and I don't get this hippopotami in long evening dress. It makes me wonder. I don't actually think these girls are prostitutes, but it's harder than ever today to tell apart where prostitution ends and normal girls' life begins. You've all heard the figure. Some absurd percentage of girls in their 20s have OnlyFans. I don't know how true that is, but I've had long experience in the third world in Brazil. Basically, entire towns, females were informal prostitutes. You'd go to a bar or club in these towns. You'd be propositioned and... they might expect or not, depending on... It can go the other way, too. You know, you can get a prost... Well, if you have family, don't let them listen to this show. But I've had Brazil prosties tell me, you know, if you can make me explode, it's free. And so the line between prostitute and not was never clear. And not rarely a professional prostitute in Brazil would even be elected to be mayor of this or that town. I don't know if it's that happening in the West, that that line is blurred, but it made me think about the optimal strategy, let's say, whether you have a formal real prostitute or an enterprising woman like this. And I believe I can see from the desultory, vulgar European cities now, I can see what these women consider their most valued prey. And I guess I wanted to tell you on this segment what I think their prey is. You have to tunnel a bit into the calculations of a prostitute to understand what means valued prey. What's their mark? You know, among women, I consider prosties anybody who sees sex or romance primarily as a means to secure material or social goods or advantages. Is that too broad a definition of prostitution? By that definition, a lot of traditional marriage is prostitution too, of a kind. Does that cover too many women? I'm a romantic, maybe. I would like to think a girl wants sex orgies with you out of the pure enjoyment of it, out of pure lust for you, unhindered by other things. That's why I used to tell girls I was a tennis instructor. It's a good idea to tell them you're unemployed and so on. And for romance, I suppose similar. I like Romeo and Juliet. That shows sacrifice of all material goods for love. I believe in that. But prostitutes, in my view, range from girls who, you know, they work the street and they can charge anywhere from $200 and up to even $10 or such in some countries. Years ago, at least I hear in Prague, there is a $5 blowjob in outskirts of Prague. I have American friends. I've never been to Czechia, I think, but I have American friends who were, told me that years ago you could get $10, $15 blowjob in a car from Czech girl. I'm sorry to say this, but I've never used that. That the idea turns my stomach. But let's say I read somewhere, so it can range from that, right, the streetwalker type, to let's say Icelandic women I've heard who are very beautiful sometimes. I have a, excuse if I repeat joke after so many shows, I don't remember if I told you. I have an English friend who pointed out Icelandic women can range from she look like she's going to take care of your sheep to just some have a very haunting beauty. So, but they can certainly be very beautiful sometimes, and they're reputed anyway to be, the Icelandic women. And they sometimes decide to work at certain resorts, expensive resorts. I don't remember if it's in the Caribbean or United States or such, in the hope they will be discovered by a rich man who comes to the resort, and then that they will marry a rich man who goes there. That's a behavior more commonly thought of now as Slavic. You know, that story I remember from more than 15 years ago. It's certainly something that happened. But that, too, I think of as a kind of prostitution. So, you know, using your sexual and romance modules for how you can max out a lottery win in life or such. There are many grades between the two I just mentioned, many others besides beyond those two. I think of matchmaking, again, as essentially prostitution, traditionally traditional marriage as essentially a form of polite prostitution. I think Steve Saylor mentioned a service that paired retired ballerinas with stockbrokers in New York City, which, okay, to me, that's a kind of facilitation of prostitution. So I don't know that the average Slavic ape who works, let's say, as a factory owner or director in Lugansk or Perm, who is proud to eat steak every day, that's a point of special social pride for some, I suppose. And I don't see that they would consider a wife as something other than a commodity. What is that? But anyway, I mean, I guess I ask, are women natural prostitutes? And then some are not, I suppose, and those are to be valued. I have an inverted view of all this. You see, I know an actual prostitute who takes money, but because she's such a slut, actually, and relishes sex or so much, and enjoys utterly violent fantasies that I can think of. And you know, I consider her actually strangely much less of a prostitute than, let's say, a frigid girl would be who does not take money but otherwise calculates how can she use her sexuality for other kinds of material gain that's not direct financial payments and who can even maybe pass for a traditional and pious woman. I'm afraid that a lot of the body count discourse on Twitter to impressionable young spurgs is making them prey to such frigid, calculating women, shrews, you know. But anyway, let's look. You go to the basic whore type, who maybe doesn't actually take money for sex, or maybe takes it very rarely, but who has somewhat higher ambitions out of her worth than being a street walker and wouldn't even work for an escort agency. But let's say the kind of whore who's an enterprising girl, you'd call her, an adventuress who might go to one of these European towns where she knows the nouveau riche hang out. She goes with a glint in her eye. She doesn't know exactly what she wants. What would her bread and butter prey be? Or let me correct that, because bread and butter implies it's a staple. I don't mean a staple. What would her most valuable and likely attainable prey be? So both valuable and likely attainable. Right, because at one end you have running tricks for $50 or $200 or even $500, which to many such girls, it's they won't do it, not necessarily out of morality, but it's not worth it. They're, you know, at other end of their ambitions, they would want to marry a billionaire. And there are girls like this who learn to think and talk in a certain way. They go to Silicon Valley, and they can rope in a tech artist, and that's a common arrangement now. And then they convince him to have a poly relationship, and he gets nothing out of it for obvious reasons. Again, I don't remember if I've talked about this, but that happens. And you see in Ella, who actually, she's an internet influencer and half prostitute also, and you can see in the way she talks and thinks, which she's honed to, I don't want to call it an art, but a technique. You can see what women who don't go as far as Ella, who are maybe not internet influencers, but the way they think and talk, that they can learn to do that and rope in a tech artist as a husband or something. But for most girls who don't know about that, the Silicon Valley path, maybe they don't speak English or whatever. And then the prospect of marrying a billionaire or having some other, let's say, 150 or a 50 millionaire be your sugar daddy. And that's an ideal case, but it's not something you can hope for or that you can plausible way to work for that even. That's a matter of luck. Let's say they're smart and they realize that. So then what would their ideal attainable prey? And I've noticed recently in these towns, you know, it's a kind of middling finances guy or even a simple wage cut guy is their target. The kind of middling finance guy, or I don't mean guy who works in financial industry, but someone who is, we like the word nigger rich, excuse me to say that word, but it's someone who is rich but not really, or someone who's not even that, but a wage cut, but they're both insecure retards. They want to feel rich. They're on vacation. You know, they want to show bling. You know, the kind of dupe who goes to expensive nightclub regularly, waits in line, orders a $600, $1,000 and up bottle service. Many go into debt, actually, to do things like this, by the way. Like, they rent a Bentley or an Aston Martin. They can't afford it, but they do it to feel like they're a rich man, or for people who they want others to see them spend $1,000 at table at nightclub at Ibiza. And it's hard to believe this until you see it, but there are many men like this. Insecure beige men especially are like this. What I call the half Nicaraguan, half Bangladeshi, indeterminate kind of sub-globalism factory product who has no ground of his own, nothing in his head, unsure of who he is, but he wants to feel he's a baller. He must look like a baller. So he tries to ape the Tate lifestyle. I mean, Tate is like this too. So he ends up getting thoroughly rinsed by adventuresses like this. By the way, a lot of these men are very showily misogynistic and red-pilled on their statements, and they get regularly rinsed by women. And this is the kind of man, the insecure Tate, is the juiciest plausible prey to these women, you know, this kind of guy. Imagine the feelings inside such a man. He spends possibly a large salary or whatever, otherwise even goes into debt to get dressed to the nines. Everything spick and span, laid out, and gets in queue at full of, you know, he's all full inside of insecure anticipation at nightclub and this kind of high-pressure social, you know, expectations thing. That it's, again, completely outdated, that kind of, the kind of feeling that he must experience this. That this is about as outdated as people who speak about dating, or I'm dating this and that, you know, but he wants to be seen to make it, you know. And such girl that I've been talking about, who's, you know, it's unclear if she's a prostitute, she has hired, but she can prey on this type. And so, no, she will not get $500 cash. She can expect a lot more. But obviously, she would not get much out of marrying such a doofus, nor can he plausibly have her as a, you know, he can't be her sugar daddy or whatever. So then what does she have to hope for? Well, she has to hope for a lot from a vacation encounter. So he can keep her for 7 days, 5 days, whatever his vacation is. And aside from endless bottle service and cocktails and expensive dinners, which, right, isn't much in the end of things, but can add up to quite a lot more than $500 worth, she can rinse him for signature gifts. And I think that's the That's the aim. I knew a girl from Sweden, okay? She was a stripper. That, as bizarre as that sounds, there are Nordic girls who are, but she was completely cold in her affect. The world of strippers internationally and such, you almost never see blonde Swedish stripper or Scandinavian. Almost, I was surprised. I think she must have been mentally ill. I mean, there was a blank look in her eye. She did not seem like... I didn't think, oh, she's fun-loving, adventurous girl. You can say, oh, she's a wild girl. She's the kind of crazy I like. She's just a slut, enjoy. No, she was cold, absent, calculating. I don't, you know, which is it's not the best way to be a to go in life, being calculating, being a stripper. But I think she was kind of crazy, or who knows what had happened to her. But anyway, she fit the model I'm talking about, more or less. The stripper thing aside, you know, that preferred method now would be OnlyFans. But I asked her, she claimed she had never taken money for sex. And I believe her. We had coffee, just coffee, a few times. I would never... It's coffee. But she claimed she had never taken money for sex. She said, I would maybe take $20,000, is what she told me. But as I pressed her for more and more stories and details of her life, and she confided in me, she told me she had recently been in Miami, Florida, and she got a minor aspiring rapper to buy her a Louis Vuitton bag, for which I understood that he barely had the money to do. And I don't even know if it's true, but she claimed to me that she didn't even have sex orgies with him, that she had verbally agreed to sex orgies with him, and maybe implicitly in exchange for this Louis Vuitton bag, but that she didn't go through actually intercourse with him because of morality or whatever, but logistical or other scheduling conflicts, whatever, which made me laugh. So she got what, I don't know what that is a $3,000 or $5,000 gift in exchange for essentially being a hostess, going out with this guy, drinking with him, vaguely promising sex, or, you know, from an insecure guy, right, who could barely afford it. And I say insecure because, yes, she was pretty, but I think for him it was the prospects of fucking a Swedish whatever that, I mean, she was so half Spurg-like and not at all in tune with nature or the way that this was very obvious to me. But to a man like that, it wouldn't be. And, I mean, there's no... that hole that is worth $3,000 to $5,000 for one go or whatever, but that's he was willing to do that and get scammed for it. So you see, this is what I'm saying. It's varieties of that. That is this type of woman's target. I don't mean, you know, such men come in all varieties and backgrounds, but, you know, when they abound now in Europe's hot summer towns, Ibiza, Saint-Tropez, or whatever else, and you go... the thinking is James Bond. People said this online. No, the fancy crowd goes to Europe because I heard, you know, it's suckers looking for an image of the baller lifestyle goes there. It's all Kardashian-type atmosphere and Costco people and the Chinese, the worst of them. You know, blind, you know what I'm talking about. I remember long ago I was told James Bond scene was shot here or there in this city. And in the movie, of course, it looks like a classy European cafe scene from the 1970s. Everyone in nice summer suits and elegant, and it looks like this half-aristocratic leftover from the pre-war years. But there aren't really any such known locations now where you could see that today, you know? There are not mass-known locations. Everything known is globalized pleb today. Very rarely and often purposefully remote locations can be exceptions. And only in the sense, not in the sense you'll see the James Bond crowd I described, but you'll see young people who look very nice and are dressed in informal beachwear, and they congregate there specifically to escape this kind of trash demographic that crowds, yes, I think maybe even Mykonos, not even, like Mykonos is probably exactly like what I've been talking about. And this trash demographic plus, of course, the boatloads of old Troon tour groups and so on, just a desultory kind of feeling, and a lot of young people who can and research it try to escape that. So would you enjoy that world, gentlemen? Because I'm not exactly describing Haiti when I tell you this. I'm not describing the nightmares repeated over and over again by dissident whatever influencers online, pseudo-Marxoid stuff about the pauperization by Labour Reserve Army and everything turned into District 9 Haiti, which I think can also be a bad long-term plausible result. But what about this other one? Would you enjoy this? It's very safe. It's nice. It's clean. Everything works well. Sparkling city streets, usually a cop everywhere, and safe haven, clean, no work, a high basic income, so that the estate of mankind may be relieved and they can live in eternal tourism, Instagram photo in front of infinite Gucci stores. Right now, that's only given as a reward, a break from work camp life for most. But what about, can that be mankind's eternal paradise on Earth? Do you think so? Is that the populist dream? The universal and homogenous end state Hegel predicted, but instead of Haiti, it's actually wealthy and safe and well-run and clean streets, quaint cobblestone, replicas of Renaissance castles, but everywhere the mass-produced ape, the final man, the last man, lumbering about in tour groups, eternally getting rinsed by OnlyFans whores with ass implants. You know, is that a good vision for... The only cure to this is war and contempt for life and contempt for humankind. And I declare war on all humankind again and again in the name of the hidden powers, in the name of the secret and eternal Hellas. Annihilation. Until next time, bap out.